A special episode of BulaNetwork.com. Hey, welcome inside the jazz club known as BulaNetwork.com. This is Randy Cantrell, your host here at Bula, BulaNetwork.com. A special unnumbered episode just because, well, sometimes that's how I roll. Today, I want to talk with you about what's in a business name. A business name. I think we've all done it. You know, you go to your favorite domain registry company. Yeah, I admit, I'm a GoDaddy customer. Well, for domain names. Say that fast three times. We go and we register some trick name that, yeah, we think that's got potential. That's got some potential for some project. You know, you read a phrase in a book, you hear somebody utter some phrase, and aren't we all drawn to clever domain names? Now, in the real world, most of our clever ideas, they don't see the light of day. I'd like to know, somebody surely keeps stats on this, but I didn't do any research. I should have. I'm curious of how many registered domain names are never used. They just sit over there perched on, you know, some virtual parking space, and they never see the light of day. They never point to a website. They never go live, and they certainly never earn a single cent of revenue. Well, you know, business names aren't much different. I think owners sometimes fail to consider the impact of a name that they give their business, particularly the impact that it has on marketing. Well, I'll just use myself as an example. I'm looking in the mirror. Let's just go ahead and look at my business name, Bula Network LLC. Well, it tells you absolutely nothing about what I do. It tells you absolutely nothing about what services or products I offer. Now, I'm going to tell you, as stupid as this sounds, that was a little bit by design. Okay, just stick with me. It sounds crazy, I know, and it probably is crazy. When you are forming an LLC, you may want to consider other things beyond marketing when you choose a name. Because you can do a DBA. You can do business as something else. There are lots of people who their legal business entity is not what you know them as, because they have a DBA, a doing business as. Now, I operate, I operated a variety of things that were really, they were all connected in some sort of way. And they all resided, well, at least the ones that had to do with Bula Network LLC, they all really kind of resided under this umbrella that was known as Bula Network LLC. Two words, Bula and Network. Bula, for those of you that have not listened, and those of you that have, I'll make this brief. Bula is a Fiji term. I came across it almost 40 years ago now. I don't know where I came across it, but I came across it and understood that it meant both hello and goodbye. It's analogous to aloha in Hawaiian. And it means life, and in particular, it carries with it the connotation that life is good. Well, again, this was many moons ago. And when I began to be in management and leadership, and I would have to issue internal memos to, particularly to my staff, I began to write Bula, capital B-U-L-A, exclamation mark, at the beginning of these memos. It was a greeting. It was a salutation. It was in lieu of saying hello or good morning. or good afternoon in a memo, I would say Bula. Now, admittedly, I had to explain it at the very first. I had to tell people what it meant. But after that, everybody caught on. So I did that for years and years and years. Now, fast forward to the late 90s, and I'm doing a little bit of stuff mainly because some people are calling me and asking me questions and other business owners and whatnot. And it was a network in the sense that I was all over the place. I might have a conversation, a deep conversation with someone about a compensation program for their sales staff. I might have a conversation with somebody else about succession planning and how they were going to try to pass on the business to a son who they didn't feel was very capable at the time. Just all over the place. I wasn't thinking of network in a podcast sense, in a broadcast sense, in any kind of a sense other than a network of services and subjects and topics that I was trying to help business owners with. So that's how Bula Network came to be. Now, I used to do some industry-specific coaching and consulting. I don't do it anymore. The niche was retail because for years I had run and led retail operations. I named that enterprise Remarkable Retail. I've been fond of the word remarkable for a long time. I've used words like remarkable, and I have used verbs. I said verbs like dazzle. I am a fanatic when it comes to customer service. I love spectacular customer service, and I learned many, many years ago that the biggest thing about customer service and the reason that you don't often experience it is because companies have not decided to deliver it. So, remarkable was a word that was very common to me. It was a word that I loved. And of course, it began with the letter R, and retail began with the letter R. So it made sense. Remarkable Retail. And I went and I grabbed remarkableretail.com. I launched a podcast. There's quite a few episodes over there. It's still up on iTunes. The website is basically just kind of a doormat. But that name told prospects really everything that they needed to know. Because in that space, I would coach and assist and teach and train and just help implement and otherwise accelerate retail businesses. So it stood to reason that Remarkable Retail was aimed at helping retailers become remarkable, well, or become more remarkable. Now, other people can decide if that was a great name or not. I thought so because it was specific and it was easy to remember. Now, there was another domain name that I've owned for a long, long time called Leaning Toward Wisdom. Well, guess what that's all about? Now, it's not a business, so this isn't really a fair comparison when we're talking about a business name, but it serves to illustrate the point. Well, you can't really guess what that's about because I think it's another example of a nice phrase, but it really just doesn't properly tell you much. Leaning toward wisdom. Well, I guess it kind of does. You know, it's for me, it has been an on again, off again kind of a project where I basically riff on about my own quest for finding greater wisdom. I began it, kind of started with the whole notion of I'm trying to lean more toward wisdom and away from foolishness. And kind of here's my journey. Currently, by the way, that website is on its fourth iteration. So that'll show you how much wisdom I was able to garner in generations 1 through 3. I think there's 4 episodes over there. I've numbered those episodes, by the way. beginning with the 4,000, because it's the fourth iteration. It's been on iTunes before. It's no longer there. I'll get it back on iTunes maybe one of these days. I post there and I podcast there very sporadically, but I've had that website. I've had that name and I've had a website there for a long, long time. My wife has been connected with the healthcare industry for decades, and I've been somewhat tickled at doctors and how they will name their practice, because most often, and of course, they've gone to school for a long time and they've spent gobs of money and gobs of time and effort and energy, and the business is their name. And they're proud of their name, as well they should be, and they're proud, especially they're proud of those, you know, that MD behind their name. And sometimes, in fact, most of the time, that's it. And they think that because they care about their name, then all the prospective patients will care about their name too. And I guess after a while, when you've built up a practice and you've had some referrals and people begin to know who you are, then absolutely your name is a bit of a calling card. But what about the doctor who's starting out and nobody knows who he is or she is and nobody cares? Patients or prospective patients, they really don't have much of a clue about who you are or what you practice unless you're world renowned. Now, in recent years, I have seen some doctors. And by the way, I have yet to encounter a doctor who has been taught anything about marketing. I mean, it's not in the curriculum. I mean, they're like lawyers. They spend so much time in practicing or learning their craft and being educated about how to do the craft. They don't know a whole lot about business. It's why many of these people have business or practice managers, because that's an area where they need help. That's an area, by the way, that I've been intrigued with for a long, long time. I have encountered so many doctors through the years, and I thought, man alive, especially when it came to customer service and being profitable and kind of not being so wasteful with stupid expenses and resources and putting your money really where it could make the most impact for your practice. And I've thought, you know, man, this is, if I had been younger, I would have absolutely gone into that area, because it just seemed like a huge opportunity to me. It still does, by the way, seem like a big opportunity to me. I have seen a bit of a morphing over the last, I don't know, decade, because now you'll find some people in medical services and they are naming their practice something other than their name. And this is smart. For example, you will see heart center or sports medicine specialist or arthritis surgery center. I mean, there's all kinds of things, and these things tend to, okay, now you're getting down to where you're kind of specific, and yeah, I've got an idea what you're talking about and what you do. Let me give you some terrific examples of how a brand name can make or break a product. Head and Shoulders. Head and Shoulders shampoo is a Procter & Gamble product. Been around for many, many years. Continues to find success because, well, the name tells shoppers what it does and what it's for. It's shampoo. Shampoo your head with this stuff and you won't have any dandruff on your shoulders. Well, duh, we can all make sense of that. Cool. Sears, I don't know what year it was, but many, many years ago, they produced a spectacular battery called Die Hard. Well, it quickly became a bestseller. And it had great product design. It had a solid guarantee, and those contributed to this. Well, come on, it was Sears, and Sears at the time was significantly bigger than they are now, in terms of distribution, in terms of, you know, brand cachet. But, you know, nothing beats marketing, and a great name helps. If you want a battery that has a hard time dying, well, then you buy a Die Hard. I mean, sure, it might cost you some more, but do you really want to risk not being able to start your car? I mean, you don't want to go buy a battery that's named Die Easy. I don't. Close-up toothpaste. Close-up toothpaste decided to join conventional toothpaste with mouthwash. Well, my, what a novel idea. TV spots would constantly show couples making out, kissing, close-up contact that, well, that appeals to us all. Brush your teeth with close-up and you'll be ready to make out with the one you love. Sign me up. Cool. I'll take two tubes, please. On and on it goes. Names that convey meaningful things about the product or the service. But there are also some examples of bad names that they don't say anything. I spend more time than I'd like to admit in talking to people about niches and helping people, business people, try to narrow down the focus of their offerings, because the temptation is to be broad-based and to be all things to all people. And that's just counterintuitive to reality. This week we had this Apple hubbub. And it seems like everybody on the planet wants Apple. And it seems like everybody on the planet is an Apple customer. They're not, of course, but yes, the Apple products do appeal to most all of us. And we look at those kinds of outliers and we think, well, that's what we want. We want to have something, or we want to sell something, or we want to be appealing to everybody. It's not the road to success. Yes, it worked for Apple. You're not Apple. So build a bridge and get over it. The same thing I think can be true of names. When it comes to niching down our businesses, niching down our focus, niching down our offerings, niching down the market that we want to serve, I think we can also niche down our names. Well, or not. I'm thinking of Google. I'm thinking of Amazon. I'm thinking of Yahoo. I'm thinking of Yelp. I'm thinking of a host of other names that we have grown to know and understand and love, hate, revere. But they don't tell us anything really about what these companies do. Google. Google is now a verb. It hasn't always been a verb. Amazon. I thought it was a river somewhere. Yahoo. I don't know. Something cowboys here in Texas say. Yelp. What my dog does if I accidentally step on him or her. I don't want to limit myself, says the business owner. Well, I've heard that way more yonder than I care to admit. Translation is, I really don't know what I am or what I'm supposed to be. So I want to leave room for expansion. I don't want to limit myself. I don't want to restrict myself. Now, for me, the more accurate translation is, I don't know what I am or what I want to be. Well, I can answer that. Well, I don't know that I can answer what you want to be, but I can answer what you are. You're lazy. You're lazy. You're too lazy to do the work necessary to figure out who your ideal customer should be. And if you can't figure out who your ideal customer can be, it can be really difficult to get about the business of what name am I going to wear? And it can also be problematic in that people don't think there's anything to a name. And there is, and we all know there is. But in this day and age of Google, Amazon, Yahoo, and Yelp, and, you know, when did we start? I started noticing within this last year, these TV commercials for this insurance company, Elephant. Where did this come from? Who are these people? Elephant. And I'm thinking, okay, you know, Geico's got the lizard, so they need an animal. And they're figuring, okay, it's an elephant. I mean, come on, you can't forget an elephant. I mean, the whole notion of an elephant, elephants remember. So you're going to remember an elephant. And it's big. It's huge. it got a lot of spectacular features that you can remember, you know, the big ears, the huge body, the trunk. I mean, come on, the trunk, you know, and then that, you know, that trumpeting sound that they make. Elephant Insurance. Has this company even been? Yes, I know. I need to do more research before I hit record. I don't know who this company is. I don't know where they came from. And I'm thinking Elephant Insurance. Okay. Whatever. I'm thinking that people are just too late. Well, like I'm too lazy right now to go. It's man, the weather here. And I doubt you even can hear it, but I can hear it. I've got crows outside the yellow studio. Well, I say they're crows. They're birds that are crowing. I don't know if they're actual crows, but you hear that? It's 50 some odd degrees. Here, I'm going to aim the mic. Come on, the crows. You got to hear crows. I've got the windows open here in the yellow studio, which is not what you should do when you're recording. Oops. I'm tearing the studio up here. See if you can hear this. And of course, the minute I turn the microphone, they stop. Idiot birds. Where was I? Crows. There's a name. And that's a proper name. And that's what they do. They crow. Speaking of names. Listen, I don't know what I am or what I want to be. You're lazy. Don't be lazy. Think about what you're doing. Think about your target market. Think about a name that will properly convey. The Minnesota Mining and Manufacturing Company was founded in 1902. They went about 15 years before they were really profitable. That company has been on the leading edge of innovation for as long as I've been alive. You know them as 3M, established as a mining company. You know them mostly for adhesives in products like Scotch tape and Post-it notes. So sometimes, as we're thinking about our ideal customer and as we're thinking about our name, yeah, there's no doubt. Sometimes it changes over time. Microsoft doubtless considered that they would be the behemoth they are today. I mean, I really don't even think Bill Gates is that brilliant. Well, he could be. Is that name niche enough? Microsoft. Yes. Yes, it is. The company has made their billions in software. That's the latter half of their name, Microsoft. I'm old enough to remember that computers were initially called microcomputers. If you're under 40, you don't recall such a time as that. Gates was forming Microsoft when that label, microcomputers, was commonplace. Now, of course, he also made Microsoft a household name before microcomputer bit the dust. I mean, nobody has used the phrase microcomputer since the 80s. But when you're ahead of the curve and you become a market leader, it will make your name it just makes it much less significant. Now, I could put forth a pretty good argument, I think, that during those crucial years, Microsoft was a name that conveyed exactly what Bill Gates wanted. And I could make the same argument for a small little brand known as Nike. I'm old enough to remember when people had no idea how to pronounce the name. In fact, some folks even called it Nike, as in bike. I mean, come on, it's like bike with an N. It's got to be Nike, right? I want some Nike shoes. If your profit margins are high enough and you can spend enough money in marketing, yeah, people will learn how to say your name. Okay, but you're not Nike. And you're not Microsoft. And by the way, you're not Apple either. Timing matters. Now, unfortunately, we can't always engineer our timing. And nor can we always know when serendipity will strike. I have found that many business owners really haven't fully thought of what they want to be when they grow up. And they don't like to consider a narrow niche. I have rarely experienced an engagement with a business that really wants to target narrowly. Rather, I have had to persuade people the value and the benefit of focusing more narrowly, because they would rather think of their business as being this broad-based, all-encompassing big dream that they have that's going to be the next big thing. Now, some of them, admittedly, some of them have been, you know, they've been listening to too many VCs, or they've been watching too many videos of Y Combinator, and, you know, and they listen, in the VC world, they want go big or go home, because the failure rate is so spectacularly high, you've got to make it big to make it at all. And so if you're betting on 10 companies and 9 are going to fail, and you know that going in, then yeah, you're swinging for the fences. Now, we mere mortals that are here in the small business world, yeah, okay, we're just not wise, in my opinion, to swing for the fences. We've got to figure out who and what we are and the niche that we're going to serve, and not be lured by the siren call of trying to be, you know, the next fork. It's just not going to happen. When I ask clients, who is your target audience? And I get back a blank stare, or they look up at the ceiling and they squint their eyes, and you can tell they're thinking, they're trying to think of an answer. I mean, it tells me a variety of things. It tells me, A, they haven't thought about it. B, if they have thought about it, they haven't thought about it enough. C, if they have thought about it, and if they have thought about it enough, they haven't thought about it enough to articulate it. And so I get this blank stare. Or I'll get some, you know, some real wide cut answer. Women 18 to 54. Okay, women 18 to 54. That's pretty broad. You know, a better answer might be women over 35 who have just given birth to their first child. Which answer do you suppose would garner greater success? Now, assuming that my product is, you can't just make up a target. Whatever your service, whatever your product is, it's got to fit the target. But you got to be thinking about the problem that you're solving for a specific group of people. The thing that you're providing for a specific group of people. Women 18 to 54 is very different than women over 35 who've just given birth to their first child. Which group do you think would be easier to reach? Alex, give me women over 35 who have given birth to their first child for 1,000, please. Because that's your answer. Names can make or break sales, because, well, names can make or break our ability to convey great marketing. And that really is the rub. An investment real estate firm could easily use Gold Bar Investments, or they could just as easily and more effectively use Gold Bar Real Estate Investments. Well, why don't they use the more precise name? I'll tell you why. They don't want to be pigeonholed, because they think, you know, it will hamper their marketing efforts. And they're thinking, well, today we're in real estate, but we might be in, what if we're not in real estate in 10 years? You know, they start getting ahead of themselves. They've not even yet made it in the real estate investment game, and already they're thinking they're going to conquer the world. Unfortunately, they've got it all backwards. And I've just proven to you that I can't even get this right. Bula Network. Because like you, I often fall prey to the voices in my head who time and time again have proven themselves wrong. And there's another thing, by the way, and that is, can we say it? Can we spell it? Now, I've talked about saying it with the whole Nike versus Nike. How do you spell that? N-I-K-E. Well, that's Nike. Are you sure it's not N-I-K-E-E or N-I-K-I-E? No, it's N-I-K-E. Now, I'm not going to use the name. I started to, but I'm on the phone with somebody, and we're talking about, you know, he's talking about registering a name, and I'm like, okay, how do you spell that with one C and two L's, or two C's and one L? And we had to think about it. And the whole time I'm wondering, I don't know if this is very smart at all. And of course, you know, the crows outside are just, they're having a, the crows love this topic, by the way. I'll walk outside and I'll make a recording. I'll put it in the show notes so you can hear the crows that are just having a field day. I should have known better. By the way, here in Dallas, Texas this morning, it is in the 50s and it's awesome. It's awesome. Feels really good. So that's why I had to open the window. So pardon the distraction. Can you spell the name? Can people spell the name? Or do they have to think about it? Do they have to, you know, Google a dictionary? You know, we sometimes just make it so incredibly difficult to do the marketing that the challenge isn't really necessarily in the marketing. It's in all of the obstacles that we put in our own way to get there. We've just not cleared the path so that we can make it easy for the customers because, shoot, it's not even easy for us. Well, I've done that. I've done that with Bula Network. You know, should this podcast be something other than Bula Network? What does that mean? Nobody knows. I have to explain it. And if you have to explain it, okay, you're behind the eight ball already. Well, let me end by giving you some suggestions. I'll just end with my top three suggestions. Number one, make your name say exactly what you do. For instance, Bill may have a furniture store, and instead of it being Bill's Furniture, how about Bill's Easy Living Furniture, or Bill's Formal Furniture, or Bill's Recreational Furniture? Well, you know, admittedly, it does depend on what kind of furniture Bill has. Does Bill have furniture for all rooms of all sizes and shapes and price points? But if Bill doesn't, if Bill has outdoor furniture, Bill's crazy to just pick Bill's Furniture. Because each of those names, Bill's Easy Living Furniture, Bill's Formal Furniture, Bill's Recreational Furniture, they conjure up specific images in our mind, and we paint these pictures with our imagination. That's exactly what you want shoppers to do, by the way, when they hear the name of your company. Oh, you don't want them to conjure up something that's not valid. You want them to create a picture in their mind of who you are and what you do, and you want it to be accurate. That's important. You want it to be accurate, so you want to make your name say exactly what you do. Number two, make your website domain be just as precise, if not more so. If Bill's Furniture decides to become Bill's Easy Living Furniture, then of course Bill is going to want to register billseasylivingfurniture.com, variations perhaps of the .com. But Bill should also consider maybe his location. Bill sells furniture that requires delivery, and so that means he's got this local market area, and let's say that it's a 30-mile radius. Well, then let's say that Bill is located in Shreveport, Louisiana. Why not register ShreveportComfortableFurniture.com or some name that contains Bill's location? That way, the prospects can, they can Google furniture in Shreveport, and of course, increasingly, Google is looking at your IP address and whatnot, and Google is making it where you can't just game the system. But it still is smart to let prospects know exactly who you are and what you do and where you do it. And of course, you can have a variety of names that point to a single website. You can have domains that point to a page that will be a portal to where you want them to go. There's all kinds of web technology that you may want to incorporate, but make your website domain name be as precise, if not more so. Number three, make your name meaningful to prospects. See, this is where I basically got all of these wrong with Bula Network. I mean, just because the name is precise to you doesn't mean that it's precise to your prospects. Bula has, I've had a long standing history and relationship with the Fiji term Bula, but it doesn't mean anything to you. Now, it could be argued, I've even made the argument, it gives me the opportunity to explain, it gives me the opportunity to tell a story, and it gives me the opportunity to tell a story that does give you some, it does sort of convey kind of who and what I am. I mean, who's going to be captivated by the word Bula, and who's going to be captivated by the word Bula that's a Fiji term and they've never been to Fiji and they're not from Fiji? And who's going to be captivated by that word when they explain to you what it means, unless that meaning is significant for them? And doesn't that tell you something about me? The fact that I'm even captivated by that word, doesn't that tell you something about me? Yes, it does. But again, you know, I'm a sales guy, right? So I'm selling you on the whole idea. It's valid, and I believe all that, by the way. But just because the name is precise to you doesn't mean it's precise to your prospects. You could do some keyword research, because finding a great name really has never been easier, because today you can find out what people are searching for. All kinds of keyword research tools that will let you know exactly how many times people are looking for certain words, and you can find the most popular words and you can incorporate those into your name if you choose. I would just have you remember these two words. This is really my advice, summed up in two words. Precision pays. Precision pays. Go narrow, go specific, go precise. Because when you do, you're going to dramatically improve your ability to make more sales. I've got a few projects in the works, and I'm working hard to get the names as precise as possible. In fact, I've got a number of them, and I've got the names precise. The names are very indicative of what they are and what they are about and who the target market is. I'll give you one example. One example is Chasing DFW Cool. Chasing DFW Cool. I live in Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas. Dallas-Fort Worth is known as DFW. Chasing, well, we all know what that is. Cool, well, what's that? Well, for this project, it's whatever I decide it is. What Chasing DFW Cool is going to be an audio magazine show, a podcast, where I interview people in the Dallas-Fort Worth area that are doing cool things. I've interviewed Carrie Wilkerson, for instance. Yeah, you didn't know she was in the DFW area? Well, okay, she's outside the DFW, but she's around here. Paul Spiegelman, smallgiants.org. Yeah, look him up. A number of people, and I got a number of people more in the hopper. Question, should I rename this podcast Bula Network? I haven't even really dug deep and dark into looking at, you know, renaming a podcast and what all that would mean, but it may be time. It may be time to either relaunch or rename Bula Network or not. I'd love to hear your suggestions. Go to the website. Go to bulanetwork.com over on the right-hand side, and you can do this either from an iPad or an iPhone or a tablet or any device. If you have a microphone connected, and you do to your phone, obviously, or your iPad or tablet, click that orange send voicemail. Leave me a voicemail. I'd like to hear your input. I'd like to hear what you think about the possibility of me renaming this podcast. And there you have it. From Dallas-Fort Worth, Texas, and the crows that are outside my window, my name is Randy Cantrell. I hope you'll subscribe to the podcast. You can do it by iTunes, Stitcher, Feedly, RSS, any number of ways. And there's all kinds of social icons over the website at Bula, BULA Network.com. This is the L Studio.